Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
Well, the Winter Wonderland is approaching. The Winter Wonderland, of course, at the New York Book Festival. And we've already spoken to a couple of fine souls with respect to that, with respect to illustrators and writers and so on. But let's actually move ahead now to another fascinating individual who's got stacks and stacks of wonderful things that you can actually provide with respect to the New York Book Festival. And lots of sort of alter egos as well. We're talking, of course, to Millie Lawson. How are you, Millie?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
So just share with us your own narrative in terms of how you got involved with this awesome event.
Well, I have a small heritage business, which is just me all alone, going by the alter ego, Mildred Freeman, the lady historian. I specialise in Nottingham history, but also Georgian and Victorian history on a broader scale, delivering lots of wonderful research about different subjects from those eras. The wonderful folk at Newark Book Festival approached me and asked if I would be happy and willing to come and provide a talk for them. And of course, I've just written Tis the Season, a very Victorian Christmas with Mildred Freeman, and I simply could not refuse the offer.
Makes perfect sense. Clearly, this is going to be the event for Saturday the 11th of December. I mean, there are other things that are happening, but we know it's always important that Mildred is actually there. Newark is very much at the heart of a whole range of historical aspects from this. I mean, has this been very much a labour of love in terms of putting the material together for this?
No, not for me at all, because it is an absolute passion and I adore everything that I research. I'm very, very fortunate to be able to employ myself, to be able to research the things that I'm passionate about. So it's never going to be laborious or difficult for me to do. I'm sure one day a project will come along and I'll drag my heels. But this one, it's Christmas and it's Victorian, so I'm a happy little bean. And you know what? Those Victorians made this history so rich for us.
Well, that's what I was going to talk about, because Winter Wonderland, of course, is very much focusing on that kind of history of the season. And our current experience of Christmas, if you take away the fizzy drink that makes you burp incarnation of Santa Claus, is still rooted in Prince Albert and, of course, the Christmas tree and Fröhliche Weihnachten and the areas relating to that as well. So in comparative terms, it's not necessarily been a long lived festival. We're only talking about really about four or five generations, perhaps.
Not the Christmas as we know it, certainly. I mean, obviously, previous generations, we have parts of our traditions that have come from the Druid period, from medieval period. We know that mistletoe, the reason we hang mistletoe is because the Druids believed that it brought prosperity and good health. We know that we have Christmas cake because of Twelfth Night cake from the medieval period. So many of these little chunks of our traditions now have come from much earlier, but what the Victorians were really good at doing were making traditions popular. So yes, they did create some of their own Christmas crackers, Christmas cards, but some of the ones that were already there, they just made really, really popular. Because of course, with the emergence of the middle classes and industrialization, things got more affordable. So now it wasn't just the posh elite that could afford to do it. It was beginning to be everybody that could celebrate this festive period.
Lots of folk will actually sort of cite Dickens as being one of the key propagandists for the season, and certainly the notion of anti-humbug. What's wrong with humbug, I say? Surely it's a matter of course on that sort of system. But I mean, allowing for the fact we already mentioned we've got the wonderful magical author Maria Kuznaia speaking on the Saturday. We've also got Chris Mould also on the Saturday. Your session, of course, or your alter ego, A Very Victorian Christmas with Mildred Freeman, taking place on the 12th of December. Do you think that here we are in the 21st century where, you know, we've got a pandemic, we've got all those other wonderful things that are actually there. This is very much a case of we're taking our baby steps into a whole brave new world. Do you feel as though we've still captured that spirit of Christmas, or is it a case of, no, we're losing it?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we've all been through so much in the last 2 years. And I also think that as a generation, we have certainly over-commercialized Christmas. We've got away from the importance of the season, which is togetherness, it's friends, it's family, it's community. And in many ways, I almost feel like the pandemic has helped us get back to that, because what we've seen is a community re-emerging, you know, everybody coming out to their front doors and clapping for our key workers, everybody suddenly getting on Facebook and saying, I can do your shopping if you can't leave the house, I can do this, I can do that. I'm hoping that what we're going to see is those key Victorian values coming through with Christmas once again, of charity, of aid, of community.
I was intrigued when looking at the general brief descriptor of dealing with carol singers, brackets, even those who are shot dead, close brackets. So, I mean, that might not necessarily merely be in the spirit of Christmas, I'm just thinking, unless, of course, we're talking about Die Hard with Bruce Willis, that well-known Christmas movie.
Well, you see, we can't talk about the Victorians without the dangerous side of being a Victorian, and there were many. Many, many, many. Health and safety meant absolutely nothing for these people. And I'm afraid if by the Victorian period, Christmas caroling and going out singing, unless it was like an arranged charitable event, a lot of people frowned upon it because it came from this, again, this medieval tradition of the waits, the city watch almost. And by the 1830s, that had been abolished. So it was now just amateurs coming out at 2 o'clock in the morning and caterwauling at your bedroom window. People weren't pleased with it anymore. And so you do get a lot of letters to the press, people complaining about the Christmas waits. And yeah, we had cases of people being shot because they were singing, accidentally shot. It was just a warning shot out the window. It's fine, you know, just get your rifle out and fire a round off and hope it doesn't hit somebody kind of thing. Again, Victorian
health. So really an American perspective on carol singing, I would have thought, yeah?
Yes, we've got all this kind of beautiful rural tradition of the rural waits from Thomas Hardy and from poems by Wordsworth. But in the city, they were not adored.
Oh, well, I mean, it gives a whole new meaning to we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, really. Exactly. It's a supposed ending. Do you have a particular Christmas favourite carol yourself, Millie, that still resonates that you'd like us to feature as part of this little piece?
My favourite Christmas carol is In the Bleak Midwinter. I actually have a Victorian Christmas in Nottingham talk called In the Bleak Midwinter, where I look at literally the Christmases of the Victorian period, the shops, the people, the markets, what people were buying, what people were doing, how we were selling, etc. And I feature that as the title because it is my favourite Christmas carol. Because we look at Christmas as this joyous time of colour and celebration and feasting, but for so, so many, it's not that. It is a bit of a bleak season to be in, especially when you look and everybody else is having such a wonderful time and you, for whatever reason, are not. So I like that carol because of its beautiful melody, because of its resonating words, and because of the message it brings us to remember that it's not all rosy and cheery for everybody.
The bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan. Earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone. Snow had fallen. Thank you.
in the bleak midwinter take us through to the next stage of this adventure. 'Tis the season of very Victorian Christmas with Mildred Freeman. We've spoken with Mildred, of course, about the early sort of lines in terms of her love for Christmas and so on, and indeed shooting carol singers. Not advisable. Please don't do it. It's not an advisory. But I'm intrigued, of course, by a wonders of the novel, New Bangs of Anticipation. I mean, Bangs of Anticipation, BOA, what's that all about then?
Well, you'll all know them. You'll all have them on your Christmas dinner table. I am, of course, talking about a Christmas cracker, otherwise referred to as a bonbon snap. again, another Christmas invention by the Victorians that became massively popular from about 1847 onwards because of a confectioner, because of a sweet maker called Tom Smith.
So looking at that, I see that you're also, I mean, I just can't believe this. I mean, it's just the festive spirit has clearly gripped the entire Lincoln or the Newark Book Festival team, I should actually say. And indeed will be attracting folk from Lincoln and all parts of the country to actually attend on this. I'm sure Sarah Bullen was very much at the heart of this because you've got, as well as your tickets to A Very Victorian Christmas with Your Good Self, of course. You've got a Christmas smoothie, a warm mince pie, refreshments being served from 1 p.m. on the Sunday before moving on to the event space at 2 p.m. So great anticipation there. Presumably, again, socially distanced and mask wearing if needed. And obviously, we'd encourage all attendees to take lateral flow tests.
Yes, exactly. Safety at all times. Especially, please, because I'm 33 weeks pregnant and I don't want to catch the allergies. Thank you very much.
What's your own favourite Christmas treat? I mean, we talked about crackers, we talked about trees, talked about, obviously, carol singing, caroling, etc. Are there any kind of things which have emerged from the period of Victorian England, Victorian Britain, where you thought, actually, this is the one that really kind of, I'm pleased it hasn't gone the way of others?
I think the thing I'm most pleased about is that children are still so in awe of Christmas, are still so, find the season so magical. This is my son's first Christmas going to a big boy school. He's, you know, he's in reception class. And the staff there are doing so much to create this wonderful magic for Christmas. So much that children were anticipating in the Victorian period, Ezra is also anticipating now. And I am so thankful that children still get that magical experience.
And the notion of Tiny Tim and God Bless Us Everyone in the corner, is that something which just, again, it's evocative of a wonderful spirit at the best of times, really. And of course, we talked about Scrooge. Let's face it, he did actually undergo a somewhat Damascus-like conversion, so that we can say Scrooge-like, but it depends which period of Scrooge's life are we talking about in terms of young Ebenezer.
Well, exactly. I think he had a massive transformation, didn't he? I would normally talk about Dickens in a Christmas presentation, but you know what? I think he's rather done. I think we should look at other novelists of the period, especially given the tradition of publishing short stories for Christmas on purpose, for people to be able to sit in the parlour and read to one another and entertain each other like that.
And doubtless the tradition of the Christmas ghost story is another whole presentation at another time, really.
Goodness me, yes. You'd have to get the cobwebs out and everything for that.
Okay, Millie, let's deal with the details. It's 'Tis the Season, A Very Victorian Christmas with Mildred Freeman, of course. Location is the Tree Juice Bar and Wellbeing Studios in Nottinghamshire.
Yes, it is.
Sunday the 12th of December, absolutely essential to actually go there and make sure you're sorted through from that. The event space, of course, is upstairs. I think it's probably worth noting because obviously access only via stairs, so that's one of the sort of other areas within that. And what about your own Christmas? Are you sort of going to be traditionally Victorianising with the whole sort of sequence, or will it be a case of, no, I prefer to actually get out my virtual reality set and actually immerse myself in an Oculus Rift which takes me back into Dickensian times?
Oh, no, it's still a very traditional family Christmas here for me, with a young child and another one on the way. It's going to be quite an easy Christmas for me. I'm not pulling out all the stops for Christmas dinner because, quite frankly, my legs won't let me stand that long anymore. But no, it will be Christmas stockings in the morning, breakfast, lovely presents, family, friendship and good cheer for me.
Well, we wish that throughout the season, Millie Lawson. Alter ego, of course, of Mildred Freeman. Huge thanks. Actually, how do people actually get in touch with you, Millie? Do you have a Facebook site? Is there an Instagram page? Do you do TikTok videos?
Oh, I'm on Facebook. Just look for Mildred Freeman, the lady historian. As is exactly the same for Instagram. I do dabble with TikTok, although I must admit I don't fully understand it yet. And I've also got a website, www.mildredfreeman.com, and you can come and find me there as well.
It's been awesome connecting with your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today there, Millie?
Oh, yes. I've had a lovely time.
This is good. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again post your latest birth and sometime in 2022?
Yes, post-confinement, I shall be back and I will very much happily be your guest again.
Mildred Freeman, huge thanks. Millie Lawson, huge thanks. Take care and, of course, happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.
It was Dorothy who said there's no place like home, and then of course we have home is where the heart is. Well, the bottom line is that as we approach the holiday season, as we're in the holiday season, many British folk, 12 million folk, are planning to spend holidays where they call home home. To kind of start unpicking this whole notion of what makes something home, what are the sort of key cues that we need to look for? Well, we're delighted to welcome a psychologist, a general all-round wonderful soul, Annabelle Lark, to the programme. Mm-hmm. How are you, Annabelle?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Excellent, absolutely delightful. And in terms of this particular survey, which of course has been developed by a team of psychologists at Innovation Bubble, we do, not surprisingly, have a deep bond with our original homes, don't we?
We absolutely do. And I was absolutely thrilled when Ring came to me about this because it's a subject that is so close to my heart. I've always referred to my parents as home. My London flat is very much just home. So the fact that this kind of feeling of restoration and nostalgia is shared amongst the UK kind of shows the power of this psychological bond. And what we found, as you say, is that this nostalgia was heavily tied to kind of sensory experiences, but particularly to food. So when we did this research with Ring, we found that there was these kind of specific recollections of the foods people enjoyed, you know, the experience of communally eating the food with their families, the emotions that evoked. And what we realized was that this was all tied to this feeling of kind of nostalgia and the kind of nurturing feeling that you get when you go home.
Now, we've also been joined by ace DJ Ariel Free to the whole routine. Ariel, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Hello. I mean, I always like to be introduced as an ace DJ, so thank you for that introduction.
You are, Ariel. You are, undoubtedly. And the life of a DJ can be very much on the road and so on. Does this survey very much resonate with yourself in terms of, well, okay, I might be entertaining folk, but this is where home is at this particular moment?
Yeah, for sure. And I think we all know that home that we grew up with, where we kind of grew the foundations, you know, as they say, will always be the home. But then there's bringing that element of that home to your place wherever you settle, because you don't necessarily stay in the same place your whole life, do you? And you're right, when I'm on the road, I think there's certain things that I pine for, which I can't wait to get back to, whether it's my own place or whether it's heading back to Scotland, where I call home. Especially around the festive period, when there's all those kind of moments that you share annually with family and friends and things that happen that, like for me this year, that maybe I won't necessarily get on Christmas Day because I won't be able to be home at Christmas Day, but I'll bring hopefully elements of that to my place, whether it be, you know, cinnamon and clementine candles, which remind me of Christmas every year, or gathering around and watching Elf because it has to happen at Christmas. So yeah, I completely agree with this research and just can relate to it so much, actually.
And of course, being Scottish, you've also got Hogmanay as well around the corner. So that's another whole issue with respect to neats and tatties and haggis and so on. But perhaps we better not go there. Although it does carry with it whole notions of food. And Annabelle, in terms of actually the top 10 lists ingredients, shall we say, that Ring have actually put together, I see home baking is very much in there, together with obviously smells. I mean, it's all to do with the senses, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think it's really interesting what Ariel said about kind of these cinnamon and clementine candles. I think what these sensory kind of experiences are doing is they're helping us to form memories. They're kind of reconnecting people to their homes. So, you know, with this research with Ring, we found that people could recall how sensory cues from their childhood environment triggered these familiar emotions and memories. And what's going on here is something called associative memory. So it's the mechanism by which these nostalgic feelings are triggered, and why, you know, the smell of coffee or the sound of your mum's footsteps coming down the stairs, or, you know, the smell of a cinnamon and clementine candle can trigger that, I'm at home feeling, that feeling of kind of safety, security, you feel relaxed, you feel comfortable. And that's why people have such a strong emotional connection to their homes.
I mean, Ariel, from the list, which incorporates obviously lighting candles, putting fresh sheets on the bed, letting in some natural light, cuddling pets and so on, having the radio or TV blaring, were there any that kind of particularly connected with yourself?
Definitely the radio and TV blaring, and that's not just because I'm in radio, but for me, there was always a soundtrack in our home, which was having the radio on when we're cooking, when you get up first thing in the morning, if I was doing like the dishes from the day before or like whatnot, it's just doing the washing to help my mum out there. There's always that soundtrack, you know, when you got in the car or always at home. So having that constant companionship of the radio. But like you mentioned earlier about food, I don't think anything will compare to getting home wherever I've been and going back to where my mum is at home and having a tatty scone and a roll. I think for me, we might not be the best cooks in the world in my family, but we definitely have traditions that we stick to. And a tatty scone and a roll is one of them.
Makes perfect sense. Annabelle, where can people find out further details about this Innovation Bubble survey and indeed the Ring research?
So all of this research will be available on Ring's website.
which is all we need to know. For the moment, ace psychologist Annabelle Lark, and let's say awesome presenter DJ Arielle Free. We'll move you up to awesome from Ace, etc. Huge thanks. Happy holidays, and have a great time and a homely time wherever you happen to be.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, back in the 1500s and 1600s, the whole notion of influenza was that diseases and plagues were all conducted under the influence of the planets, hence influenza. I think we've moved on a little bit since then, or maybe we haven't, because maybe the British public aren't taking flu as seriously as they should be. So the clear question is, are the British public taking flu seriously? And we're delighted to actually put that to consultant epidemiologist at Cardiff University, John Watkins. John, welcome to the programme. First of all, how seriously do you feel that people are taking the flu, or is it just a case of, oh, well, it's not as bad as COVID, so let's not worry about it?
Well, I mean, in a recent survey, so Sanofi Pasteur carried out a survey in September of this year, and in that survey of 18 to 64-year-olds, they found that only 54% were concerned about it, and 57% thought it was a serious disease. So it means that just under half the population are not necessarily taking it as seriously as they should.
Now, we're in the middle of the flu season. From that point of view, could you actually just share with us the symptoms of flu and how it's likely to manifest?
The thing about flu is, and all these respiratory viruses, they all seem to start in the same sort of way, you know, the high temperature, headache, general aches and pains. The thing that makes flu distinct from influenza, distinct from other viruses, is the sort of way those symptoms progress very, very quickly. And so you feel incredibly lethargic, severe aches and pains, headaches, and generally you don't have the energy to sort of get out of bed. So now with most people, that's fine and you'll recover back to normal activity in about 10 days. But if you've actually got an underlying condition, chronic disease of the heart, lungs, chest, kidneys, immunosuppressed, diabetes, then you can have serious consequences. You can be hospitalized, and up to 10 to 11,000 people die every year from flu.
Now, obviously, there are ways in which there's a commonality between flu and indeed COVID. Things like practicing hand hygiene, disinfecting surfaces, wearing a mask, of course, about avoiding large crowds and seeking vaccination. I mean, are those, in a sense, standard things which can obviously help maintain one's health as a matter of course, really? And there should be things we should all be doing, really.
Absolutely. Yeah, the sort of your standard precautions of protecting yourself by, you know, healthy diet, alcohol, smoking, etc. Those things, you know, sort of stopping smoking if you do, etc., will all reduce your body susceptibility. And washing your hands and doing the other things that we've got used to in the last 18 months or so will protect others. So, and not going out if you've got symptoms, those are important things. But over and above that, the thing you can do for yourself is get vaccinated.
And indeed, you mentioned the B word there. Let's talk about vaccination. Presumably, one can obviously visit one's pharmacist or indeed GP, or indeed check out on the NHS website to see if you are eligible for a free flu vaccination, which would be well worth considering.
Absolutely, yeah. And going onto the government website and looking at the National Immunisation Programme will tell you whether you're in the high-risk groups to get vaccination. And as I say, all over the 50s are recommending those with chronic conditions. Speaking to your GP, if your GP hasn't already contacted you, because they'll have flu vaccine available, so contacting your GP and discussing it with them. Visiting your local pharmacist and they'll have posters up advising you, or visiting the Sanofi Pasteur website, younotflu.com, places where you can get information.
Now let's just talk briefly about Sanofi Pasteur's You Not Flu campaign, which is as part of that. What are the main objectives of the campaign, John?
Well, it's basically to raise general awareness about influenza as a serious disease, with serious complications for those in high-risk groups, to highlight the point that the things people can do to protect themselves and protect others. And I think in terms of vaccination, to encourage people not to forget about influenza, and that influenza vaccination is one of the things we've got to fight against this disease.
Yeah, absolutely. And a reminder, of course, it's younotflu.com for the Sanofi Pasteur's information as far as that website is concerned. Or you can also go presumably to the nhs.uk aspect with respect to conditions/flu if you wish to find out further details.
That's it. Yeah.
John Watkins, of course, consultant epidemiologist from Cardiff University. Huge thanks, and be well and be a flu resistant, John.
Thanks very much.
Well, it's a very sober fact that the armed forces charity SAFA is warning of growing financial hardship and food poverty amongst veterans and their families. And to address this, we're pleased to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of SAFA and indeed the former Lieutenant General. That's the wonderful Sir Andrew Gregory. How are you, Sir Andrew?
I'm very well. Alex,
excellent. I mean, really disappointing and, as I said, sobering news to actually realise just how ill-prepared in many ways our veterans are actually are with respect to this. I mean, there's a pandemic, there's all sorts of other areas, and we see in this particular story that there are an increasing number of veterans and their families just struggling to stay afloat, let alone celebrate Christmas.
So, It is depressing to see that, but I probably need to put it in a broader context. So 15,000 people leave the armed forces each year, and most of them go on to very successful subsequent second careers. And I would urge employers across the East Midlands to consider them as employees. They will add great benefit to your companies. But some do struggle, and that's where the Soldiers, Sailors, Airmen and Families Association, SAFA, the Armed Forces Charity, steps in. And what we have seen, Alex, as you rightly say, is a growth in financial hardship and food poverty. That is of concern, particularly during these winter months and as Christmas approaches.
It's been since 2008 that SAFA has been supported by the Sodexo Stop Hunger Foundation. Clearly, that was post-banking crisis. Now we are not exactly post-pandemic because it seems as though it's still very much with us from that point of view. But the figures in 2021 certainly seem to be showing a slight improvement from the crisis of 2020. But again, lots needs to be done, presumably.
Lots needs to be done. So amongst our beneficiaries, there was an initial drop, interestingly, of numbers coming to the charity in 2020. Perhaps that was less contact with family, friends, and local authorities. And part of the problem, Alex, is veterans are often too proud to ask for help. So one of my messages to your listeners is if you know of somebody who is in need, has served in the armed forces, SAFA is there to help them. But despite that, we still helped 79,500 people in 2020. And this year, the numbers are running about 15% higher than that. And in partnership with great organizations like Sodexo Stop Hunger Foundation, we have the resources to support those people through our network of volunteers.
You raised a very important and significant point there, because obviously we're tremendously grateful for people who have actually served in defence of the country, actually served in the armed forces. But coming along with that, presumably also comes a certain sense of wanting to be self-reliant, wanting to be self-sufficient, etc. And perhaps a message that also needs to be put out today is that SAFA is there to actually help and assist. And the fact that anybody, doesn't matter what their background happens to be, can actually sometimes have the vicissitudes of life turn against them.
You are so right. So I'll use one example, and he is prepared to have his name shared in the public domain. He's a gentleman called David Tovey, who served in the Royal Logistic Corps in the British Army between 1991 and 1997. And he left because he was worried that his sexuality, David's gay, would lead to a dishonourable discharge. That was before the ban on homosexuality in the armed forces was lifted on the 12th of January 2000. David initially did very well as a chef. He went on to have a good career, but then physical and mental issues caught up with him. And in 2013, he tried to take his own life. And SAFA accommodated him in a hostel. David is now a successful artist, photographer. He exhibits around the world, and he would put that down to SAFA. And so David both championed SAFA and encourages others to step forward, and also champions LGBT veterans who need assistance and need to be recognised for their service, just as other veterans do. So we're there for everyone, Alex. And my message, please don't be too proud to ask for help. And if some of your listeners have some time, we would love them to come and join our cohort of volunteers who make such a difference to those in need.
Well, clearly within Lincolnshire, obviously connected to the armed court forces with RAF Scampton and other sort of areas and agencies and so on, we're more than happy to support this message. How can people actually get in touch with SAFR? What's the best route?
So there are two routes. Firstly, through our website, SAFR, SSAFA.org.uk. You can volunteer there. You can even donate your money, because we could always do with some more funds. And secondly, particularly if you're someone in need, please ring our confidential helpline, 0800 260 6767. We need to hear from you. We are here to help you.
Absolutely. And you, of course, joined the SAFR Armed Forces Charity as CEO in September 2016. Do you feel as though we are living in unprecedented times, or do you think that actually there's always light at the end of the tunnel?
So I think the last 18 months have been extraordinary, and we've all had to adapt our lifestyles in ways we probably previously never envisaged. But I, Alex, am always a glass half full person. And I think society has adapted, is continuing to adapt. We're worried quite rightly about this new Omicron variant of COVID, but we will come through that. We've had challenges before. And because of the freedoms and liberties we have in our society, which is what our veterans have given us, we will come through this. So I am wholly optimistic, but not immune to the challenges some face.
Absolutely. Sir Andrew Gregory, Chief Executive Officer of SAFR and indeed former Lieutenant General, huge thanks, and have a terrific holiday season, Sir Andrew, and keep up the excellent work.
And Alex, thank you very much to you and all your listeners likewise.
Faces. I'm driving home for Christmas, yeah. Well, I'm moving down that line, and it's been so long, but I will be there. I sing this song to pass the time away. Driving home for Christmas. It's gonna take some time, but I'll get there. Top to toe in tailbacks. Oh, I got red lights all around, but soon there'll be a freeway, yeah. Get my feet on holy ground. Christmas. Driving home for Christmas with a thousand memories. I take a look at the driver next to me. He's just the same. Just the same. Thank you.
lights all around. I'm driving home for Christmas, yeah. Get my feet on holy ground. So I sing. Driving home for Christmas. Driving home for Christmas with a thousand memories. I take a look at the driver next to me. He's just the same. He's driving home, driving home.
Well, it's fair to say that not only are we gripped by the joys of the coronavirus and indeed the Omicron and so on, but we've also got a fuel crisis as well that's occurring, which is one of the reasons why it's hardly surprising that half of renters, or nearly half of renters, are actually worried about how they're going to pay their bills this winter, with some 62% possibly struggling to actually pay their rent and their energy bills. So how can we at least begin to address this? Well, we're pleased to actually welcome two fabulous souls to actually talk about this particular challenge. First of all, property expert extraordinaire, the fabulous Kate Faulkner. How are you, Kate?
I'm great, thank you.
Excellent. And we've also got the head of policy at Smart Energy GB. That's Jagan McNeil. How are you, Jagan?
I'm very well, Alex. Thank you.
Excellent. Kate, just looking at this particular series of challenges, it is obviously a matter of concern if you are in the renting sector to actually sort of say, well, how do we actually stay warm and at the same time pay our rent?
Yeah, it's a horrible choice that nobody should really have to make, isn't it? But we've been pretty resilient over through the pandemic. So we'll get ourselves through this. And really, one of the great ways to do this is to start with is to get yourself a smart energy meter. For me, it's really like the kind of even if you kind of do nothing with it, as long as you get one of those, you're contributing, for starters, to our net zero targets, because you're providing information on your energy use. But the beauty is that not only are you providing information to the utility companies, you get the information daily yourself. And I think that's the trick to it, is that you really understand what is pushing your bills up that you might not realize, and what might not actually be costing you as much. So you might think every time you put your heating on, this the smart meter will go ballistic. Well, I've got mine and actually it's not that bad, but I know how much it costs me daily to heat my home, so I don't worry about it so much. So I think it can do one of two things. One, it can help you understand your energy use and therefore understand how to reduce it, and the second thing is it can take some of those fears and worries away.
And Jagan, doubtless from Smart Energy, you would endorse what Kate's just been saying there. Are there any other areas that you think can be usefully applied for people to actually start making useful savings with their energy usage?
Yeah, I think that there's loads. And as Kate was just saying, you know, making that energy usage visible really allows you to see what's going on in your home. In the analog meter world, the traditional meters we currently have, it's largely unseen. We don't really know what's going on with our energy usage, and that also gives us a bit of an inability to see what's going on around the home as a whole. So it does allow us to see energy on an ongoing basis. It also allows us to make the choices to make our homes more efficient and more energy efficient. And if you're a renter, for example, if you have that data, you can go to your landlord and say, I think we need to maybe look at the insulation or the windows or possibly the boiler, or some of the appliances are less efficient than they could be. And ultimately, they're then costing the tenant money. So it's making energy visible, and it's allowing people to have a conversation, whether it's with their supplier or with their landlord, or equally a landlord with their tenant, about energy usage and how everybody can work together to make ourselves as a nation more energy efficient, and helping us to meet those climate change goals that we all hear about, but we all know that they're very important for us to achieve.
Kate, you're the founder of propertychecklists.co.uk. You've also got a few very important tips for this particular aspect. And one of them, I think Jörgen alluded to there in terms of making sure that you actually checked what eco features the property actually has already.
Yes, because you might not know. And to be honest, I've been learning a lot this year about how to make everything more eco-friendly. And what I didn't know was I've got a boy is about 4 or 5 years old, and it's got a little button on it, which is called it's an eco button. And what I didn't know was that my boiler was keeping instant hot water readily available for me. And if you turn that eco button off, it only takes like a minute or something for the hot water to come through. But actually, just a simple thing like just checking your boiler, and you don't need to ask your tenant or your landlord about that. You can just press that eco button, and that can start reducing your bills. Another one, and I kind of love this because is LED lighting. So there's always a little bit of an upset between landlords and tenants as whose responsibility is it to change the light bulb. And it is the tenant's responsibility. And again, here's something you can do. If you do fit LED lighting, the really good news is that I think it can save you like £40 a year. Well, that's a lot of money. I don't know, I'm trying to remember my student days, but that was at least a good week shopping from my perspective. And then the sort of things that you could talk to your landlord about, one of the things that I love is I've got thermostats on my radiators so that I heat the rooms that I need to. From a landlord's perspective, if you haven't got those, it's worth asking for them. And of course, with a kind of landlord hat on, if you're doing any changes to your property over the next few years, please, please, please make sure that you fit insulation if you haven't got it already. It can make a massive difference to the heating bills of your tenants. The beauty is the less utility bills your tenant is paying, the more money they have to give you rent. So it's a huge win-win for tenants and landlord, this. And I really hope that it helps them work together, much like many of them did through the pandemic.
I mean, Jörgen, do you think that there's reason to be optimistic about the ways in which we can actually deal with these things, especially given, as we said at the start, we've obviously got huge energy prices that we're being faced with, and of course concerns about the environment as well?
Absolutely. I think there's lots of positives to be seen, and we know that people are concerned about, you know, the here and now in terms of paying their energy bills, paying their food bills. We're coming up to Christmas, which is typically an expensive time of the year for everybody. So any way that you can monitor your usage, whether it happens to be your energy or whether it happens to be your phone usage or anything else that you are continually spending money on, having energy data or any other data visible allows you to make choices on the back of that, which then you can adapt your behavior with a view to reducing your costs in whatever you're doing. But you can only do that by having the knowledge to do that. And I think people are very, very savvy and very canny. And they, when they are presented with data of their usage for whatever they're using, they sometimes, you know, probably initially have a shock. I didn't realize I used that much. But it's a good shock in the sense that, right, I'm going to change my behavior. I'm going to do something differently so that I'm reducing my costs. And in energy terms, it means I can also reduce my carbon footprint, my impact in the environment, and help play my part as the rest of the nation is to achieving net zero and reducing your impact on climate change. Because especially on the climate change issue, time isn't really on our side and we need to be taking action now.
And presumably smartenergygb.org is, as ever, the go-to website to find out further information. Is that right?
Absolutely. And anyone, whether you're a renter who pays the bill or whether you're the landlord who pays the bill, you should have a conversation with your energy supplier to get a smart meter installed and just really get that process started. Because the best thing is when you get your smart meter installed, they will teach you how to use it and how to interpret the data that comes on the handy in-home display. So it's a really important thing to talk about and really get the process going so that you as the landlord or you as the tenant can start to see the benefits of having energy data visible to you to make choices on the back of it.
Jörgen McNeil, Head of Policy at Smart Energy GB, and of course, Kate Faulkner, founder of propertychecklists.co.uk and all around fine souls. Take care and happy holidays.
Thank you.
To you Alex. Too. Thanks.
southern far, sounds of forever still around. Lovers in love, just like we were, 'cause being apart's a lonely sound. And when people ask how we stay together, I say you never let me down. Yeah, you make it feel like Christmas, even when things go wrong. I hear the sound of Christmas in your song. Oh, sun shining on me, nowhere could be a better place. Lovers in love, yeah, that's what we'll be. When you're here with me, it's Christmas Day. 'Cause you make it feel like Christmas, even when things go wrong. I hear the sound of Christmas in your song. Oh, that's how you know that it's true, babe. Just look at us now, part of it all. In spite of it all, we're still around. So wake up the kids and put on some tea. Let's light up the tree. Christmas Day, and you make it feel like Christmas, even when things go wrong. Say it now, I hear the sound of Christmas in your song. You know I do, baby.